Emily Dickinson, she's one of those writers who's as famous for her life as for her work, the whole unpublished spinster living in seclusion thing. So for our series on American icons, we asked Studio 360's Sean Cole, who's a poet himself, to take a closer look at one of her most famous poems, Because I Could Not Stop for Death. For a high school English standby, it's a pretty strange work of art.
I started off by looking at the original. It's at the Houghton Library at Harvard University. One of the curators, Leslie Morris, had it waiting for me in the Dickinson room.
It's under lock and key.
Well, you know,
the room is filled with stuff that actually belonged to Dickinson, stuff that was important to her.
She wrote at that table?
She wrote at that table and in that chair.
Oh, my God.
Emily Dickinson is a poetry prophet. You hear all the time that she was a modernist before modernism and a surrealist before surrealism. And yet, I never thought Because I Could Not Stop for Death was that great an example of what she could do. It seemed too high school-y, too obvious and archetypal. But seeing the thing she wrote with her hand, it was like looking at some sacred lost scroll.
Could you possibly read the poem?
Would you mind reading it?
Sure. No, I mean, no.
Because I could...
All right, ready? Because I could not stop for death.
He kindly stopped for me.
The carotel, but just ourselves.
And immortality.
We slowly drove. He knew no haste. And I had put away my labor and my leisure too.
For his civility.
We passed the school where children strove.
At recess in the ring.
We passed the fields of gazing grain.
We passed the setting sun.
Or rather, he passed us.
The dews drew quivering and chill.
For only gossamer my gown.
My tippet only tulle.
We paused before a house that seemed a swelling of the ground.
The roof was scarcely visible.
The cornice in the ground.
Since then, 'tis centuries.
And yet feel shorter than the day.
I first surmised the horse's heads.
Or toward eternity. It's a wonderful poem, isn't it?
It's perfect, really, that Dickinson should write from the perspective of someone who's already died. No one heard Dickinson's true voice until after her death, and she weirdly seems to have planned for posthumous fame. For example, when the poems were discovered in the Bureau, about 900 of them, including Because I Could Not Stop for Death, were neatly copied out into 40 hand-bound booklets. Leslie Morris let me hold the piece of string Dickinson used to bind one of them.
Oh, my God. Wow. I've never been so enthralled by holding a piece of string before.
I was so thrilled, I told my friend Joseph about it. Like, I'm, like, practically crying over a piece of dirty string
well,
that I'm holding
in my hand.
It
wasn't just any piece of dirty string.
It wasn't just any piece of dirty string. Joseph Lease, is chair of the MFA program in writing at California College of the Arts and a celebrated poet himself. He's the one who first turned me on to how radical Dickinson was for her time, which is why she's so much more popular now than a lot of other 19th century American poets, he says.
You, if you ask Americans, you know, well, you've read some poetry in school. Who do you love? Americans don't say, oh, I love Longfellow. Boy, I mean, some of them do. Longfellow has his fans.
But come hither, my little daughter, and do not tremble so, for I can weather the roughest gale that ever wind did blow.
Henry Wadsworth Longfellow was part of a whole windy gang known as the Fireside Poets. They wrote long, midnight ride of Paul Revere-type macho verse, poetry with a capital P. It was Dickinson's little p, her plain-spokenness and economy, that helped usher American poetry into its next era. She could worm through to the same huge issues, death, beauty, love, using a fraction of the words, in a meter so common.
It's called common meter, usually. Yeah, it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
This is Billy Collins, former U.S. Poet Laureate.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. That 4-3 meter, it's the meter of the hymn, as everyone knows. It's also the meter of nursery rhymes. Old King Cole was a merry old soul, and a merry old soul was he. Same exact rhythm.
A rhythm that can sound kind of repetitive to younger readers of Dickinson these days.
I'm in this writing class right now, and one of the first days we got there was a group of people sitting in the corner just bashing her.
Jenny Proctor is a senior at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. When she was in high school, she started an Emily Dickinson fan club that no one joined. Now that she's in college, things haven't gotten much better.
They're like, you can sing her songs to the tune of,
Gilligan's Island.
Gilligan's Island, thank you. You know, and they were singing along and laughing, and, you know, I didn't join in or anything.
Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me.
You know, I tried to stand up for her, and I'm just like, you know, hey, she did it beautifully. You know, I'd like to see you try that.
To achieve such linguistic originality within the little dance, the very conservative little structure of that meter is part of her wonderment.
There's a kind of, and this is a big theme in the Dickinson literature, the lack of reference in her language.
This is Robert Howard. He's studied the Dickinson literature at length and written articles on her work.
Take the example of gazing grain. What is gazing grain? I mean, you might think grazing grain, but, you know, it sounds absolutely right, but there's no way really to know what it means.
We passed the fields of gazing grain. We passed the setting sun.
The thing is, you don't have to know what it means. Dickinson understood, innately, that something could feel true without having to make literal sense. No one else was playing with words like that at the time. Walt Whitman was just as radical, but in a totally opposite, declarative, celebratory way. And in any case, Dickinson never read him, said she heard he was scandalous.
This is Emily Dickinson's bedroom.
Dickinson's house is about three blocks from the center of Amherst, Mass. It's a museum now. Cindy Dickinson showed me around. She's the director of programming and interpretation.
And I am not related to Emily Dickinson.
That's so funny.
A lot of people think of Dickinson as having been holed up in this house her whole life. But for about 15 years of it, she lived down the street.
The other house looked out over the town cemetery. And many scholars speculate that one reason she wrote using funerals, cemeteries as imagery, is that that was her experience. I mean, it was right next door. So they were her neighbors, in essence. So that is...
The dead were her neighbors.
The dead, yes, right.
And now she's buried in that cemetery.
Born December 10th, 1830. Called back May 15th, 1886.
Dickinson used that little phrase, called back, in the last letter she ever wrote, a letter to her cousins to tell them she was dying. It read, in its entirety, "Little cousins, called back, Emily." Again, she was concise. But if you're called back, there must be a caller, which might be why death seems so comforting in a lot of her poems. Joseph Lees.
I think one of the ways that "Because I Could Not Stop for Death" really speaks to contemporary readers, I think when the dead speak in a poem, when a posthumous voice speaks, it answers one of our deepest needs. We hope that there's a heaven, and not just a heaven, but a heaven where you're still yourself, where there's still a sense of personal agency.
Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me.
About 14 years ago, Emily Dickinson came back to life on late-night radio in Boston. A woman named Belinda West portrayed her a few times on WGBH's Night Air, and she's still playing Dickinson at schools and various events. I thought talking to her might be the closest I could get to talking to the poet herself. Except, what do you ask Emily Dickinson?
Were you lonely?
Sir, we've hardly met. Are you lonely?
You never feel quite so small as when Emily Dickinson gives you a hard time.
And why don't you seek to publish more?
Oh, fame is a bee. It has a song, it has a sting, and ah, too, it has a wing.
That's a whole Dickinson poem, actually, just those four lines.
This business of submitting material to those who only change its form entirely and its meaning as well, why seek that? It's the auction of the mind.
And Belinda citing another poem there, the full quote is, "Publication is the auction of the mind of man." Dickinson published 11 poems while she was alive, all of them anonymously. No one saw "Because I Could Not Stop for Death" until it was put out in a volume of her work, 4 years after her actual death. And even then, no one saw the whole poem. The editors on that first posthumous collection cut out the fourth stanza.
"We passed the setting sun, or rather he passed us. The dews drew quivering and chill for only gossamer my gown, my tippet only tulle."
This is a total mystery. My best guess is that they thought Dickinson was too scantily clad in her gown of gossamer. Anyway, it wasn't until 1955 that the full version of the poem was published. And over the years, certain poets have gotten pretty excited about that gown of gossamer part, if you know what I mean.
I was taking my clue from that stanza.
This is Billy Collins again. He's talking about the title poem of one of his books. It's called Taking Off Emily Dickinson's Clothes.
I remove her tippet, of course, and then the gown of gossamer. That's got to go.
Is she naked at the end of this poem?
She's naked in the second stanza, yeah.
Collins wrote the poem, he says, because he was tired of this one particular thread in Dickinsonian scholarship, the question of her sexuality, whether she was gay or not. He calls it unprofitable gossip.
And that was the frustration I experienced when I decided to write Taking Off Emily Dickinson's Clothes and have sex with her.
So you have sex with her in the poem?
Yes.
You dog, you.
Well, grr. Rough.
Collins' poem is one of about 80, collected in a whole anthology of tributes to Dickinson. Her influence is renewed with every generation of writers. Again, Joseph Lees.
The gorgeous music and amazing rhythmical control in her work are there in a number of contemporary poets, and that's something that inspires me deeply. I feel like I tune my ear by reading her poetry aloud, and you know, along with other poets as well, of course, but always her, always returning to her.
Because I would not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me.
And musicians keep returning to her too. This poem has been scored at least 5 times, including this version by Aaron Copland and 3 folk versions.
We slowly drove, he knew no haste, and I had put away
my labor and my leisure too for his civility.
In fact, the poem is so iconic, it's been spoofed in newspaper columns. The one in the Denver Rocky Mountain News turned it into a story about a skiing accident.
Because I could not stop for breath, it kindly stopped for me. We'd both been going awfully fast until I hit a tree.
Maybe this is why Dickinson rejected the very idea of fame, at least while she was around to experience it. One time, in a letter to a friend who was critical of her work, Dickinson wrote, "I smile when you suggest that I delay to publish. That being foreign to my thought as firmament to fin. If fame belonged to me, I could not escape her." For Studio 360, I'm Sean Cole.
You can find out more about Emily Dickinson and Because I Could Not Stop for Death, and about all the dozens of American icons that we've dissected and celebrated so far at studio360.org.